Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there, welcome along to the latest edition of the Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport. Greg Haynes with you, James Tozen here as well. Hello, James.
Hello, Greg.
Good weekend of bike racing at Magny-Cours in France. Good weekend of bike racing at Snetterton for the World and British Superbike Championships. I'm afraid we're not in the best of moods here, are we? We've had a fantastic weekend. We've had a fantastic weekend. We are neutral. We don't mind who wins races or championships, but the way in which a race result has been changed this afternoon, I think we're all shocked. James Whittam shocked back at Snetterton. We've just heard from him on the TV chatting with Rachel Stringer. If you weren't following the racing, you might not know, but it was a treble this weekend for Toprak, Razgatlioglu and Yamaha. We'll talk more about that in a moment and how fantastic a weekend it's been. But during the 300 race this afternoon, we had a message appear on the bottom of the screen. It's the first we'd heard of anything. All of a sudden, we find out that Jonathan Rea is now the winner of the sprint race. A protest went in from Kawasaki Racing Team, as we suspected, didn't we, James, during that 300 race. Paul Denning, the Yamaha team principal, has since confirmed that. And they've basically knocked Toprak back from first to second for the most ridiculous exceeding of track limits, because he just about clipped a green painted area coming out of 180, despite Jonathan Rea carrying more corner speed behind him. I'll just shut up for a second there, James, and let you speak. I can't quite believe it. I'm just shocked.
Well, I'm glad you've dragged it out, because I'm speechless about it. It's disgusting. And Kawasaki should be embarrassed about the protest. The rules state in the rule book that a protest has to be in and registered within half an hour of the event. So that would have been within half an hour of the event. And you said something quite interesting, Greg, when you saw Jonny Rea wanting to whisper something in the ear at the post-race Parc Fermé area straight after he's just took his helmet off. And was that at the time where Jonny Rea just hinted at Pere Rubens, saying, look, check that out, that could be a misdemeanor on their behalf. And obviously that's what's happened. Within half an hour, they've put the protest in. But when you watch the replay back, I would be hard-pressed to find too many people to say that those tyres exceeded the white line, for one, fully, because the tyres have to exceed it fully. And then to say any advantage was taken, because there wasn't for me, because actually Jonny Rea overtook him at the next corner. Let's not forget. Jonny Rea overtook Toprak at the next corner after that. So where was the advantage of that? I didn't see that. But yeah, really, really bad taste. And like I say, Kawasaki should be embarrassed herself. Dirty tactics below the belt, and they don't deserve, and they are not, they've got no place within motorcycle racing.
Now, of course, if Jonathan Rea wasn't whispering something about that particular moment to Pere Rubens, we apologise. And only Jonathan and Pere will know what was discussed there, because it was particularly secretive.
Well,
but either way...
Sorry to interrupt, but it's a good call, Greg, because I don't think a camera would ever pick that up.
I think that's probably
It has to be
happens.
From the eyes of the guy behind.
That's what I would
which
think.
Top,
and there was only
Johnny.
One guy behind. Yeah, it was
exactly,
Jonathan.
Mate. I think you're right.
It might not be the... I mean, let's just say, I mean, they may... I can't remember. We've only just come off air. I think, did they ever show a replay from that far back? Perhaps it was someone in the garage. So if that's the case, Jonathan, we apologise. We don't know for sure who first saw it. But anyway, somebody in Kawasaki Racing Team saw it.
Whoever's seen it shouldn't have put a protest in. Yeah. So it doesn't matter if it's Johnny or anybody.
Well, the protest has to come from the team manager, I believe, doesn't it, James? So that would have been Gim Roeder, who went there. I don't even know whether Yamaha at the time would have known. They have to send representatives from both parties, don't they, to race control. So would that have been the two riders and the team managers?
Well, it has to be registered within half an hour, and then obviously then the other parties have to be notified of it.
This has obviously been going on all afternoon then.
Yeah,
Not only that, James, let's talk about the actual the actual amount of time it took for that decision to be made. Why are we getting a result change for the sprint race during the afternoon's Supersport 300 race? We'd already had another Superbike race, a Supersport race, which was delayed with a load of time in between, and a 300 race. Why has it taken so long?
I'll tell you why it's taken so long, because you would have to watch that 5,000 times to actually all of a sudden convince yourself that there was an advantage taken and they broke the rules of going beyond the track limits. Simple. They must have done.
Formula One car racing has had a lot of stick in recent years for some really silly and stupid, you know, you think back to Hamilton and Massa at Spa in 2008 and races being changed and all the rest of it. Bike racing generally has always been the more gentlemanly side to motor racing, I think it's fair to say, hasn't it? Because it's so much more dangerous, I think, is the main reason. The problem is now, though, James, a precedent's been set here. If you look back to Assen earlier this year, Locatelli and Toprak again cut across the green-painted area marginally coming out of the last chicane at Assen, and both lost second and third positions there, dropped back to third and fourth. The race stewards, we hear, didn't even agree with that, but because the rule says you're not allowed to exceed track limits, they had to go by the book. But this is just getting ridiculous now, isn't it?
They were beyond the white line in that one, though. So there was an argument
fair
in
enough.
Assen. Even
but, I mean,
though
the
it
thing
was
is
the last
though,
lap and they didn't lose or gain any time, and the results would have been exactly the same if the riders would have stayed on the white line towards the checkered flag, because it was literally, what, 10 yards, 20 yards from the misdemeanor to the checkered flag. So whether they were, like, you know, half a meter to the right or left, the results would have been the same regardless. So that's why we questioned it. But they were obviously beyond the track limits. So, you know, the rules are the rules and you have to respect the rules. It is a dangerous sport, like you're saying. So the rules have to be respected. But yeah, that was a bad call. Bad call. And it's a bad taste in his mouth. But you know, let's try not to kind of let that just mask everything that we've seen this weekend with the amazing talents of Toprak and Johnny and even Scott Redding in that last race, getting that podium. It's not been an easy weekend for Ducati and for Scott, that's for sure. And the championship's just starting to look a little bit difficult for him, isn't it? But the quality of the other riding at such high level are right on the edge. And I think this could be something to do with what we've seen here with this protest, because the pressure's on, isn't it? The pressure is really on. And each team is having to eke out every last bit of opportunity to get their package one step ahead of the other. And the Kawasaki at the minute, the package with Johnny Ray, it just doesn't look like it's as comfortable to do the lap times as the R1. So because of that, you know, they're up till 1 o'clock in the morning looking at all the data of the front suspension, rear suspension, the balance, the wheelbase, the electronics, the traction control, the start procedure, blah, 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 blah. And it, their backs are so against the wall at the minute with Toprak and the R1, they're even going to this level of looking at where they, if there's any break of the rules. And it's because of all of that pressure that they're being forced to do tactics like this. But in my opinion, you know, that's a bit too far beyond.
Obviously, we've got to be fair here. We've got to balance this argument and look at it from both points of view, of course. You mentioned before, Jonathan Rea was quicker out of that 180 anyway, the left-hander, the right-left flick down towards Imola. And as you say, James, he did pass Toprak. So would Jonathan argue and Kawasaki argue, okay, yeah, we were quicker, but we were on the racetrack. He was technically off the racetrack. I'm just trying to see it from Kawasaki's point of view.
Yeah, but he wasn't. That's the thing. You know, you look at those tyres, and the rear tyre on the view that I saw was probably 2/3 over the white line, but it was still connected, still touching the white line. And in my opinion, you know, my opinion, if the tyre is still touching the white line, you are within track limits. And it wasn't as nowhere near as clear cut as Assen. I mean, Assen, both tyres were over the thing. They're all both on the blue or the green, whichever the colour the tarmac is painted. That was blue there, wasn't it? I think, and most of it is green. So it's
And we saw a Supersport 300 rider. I must admit, I can't remember who it was now, but on the last lap at Assen earlier this year, coming out of the right handers towards the ram's hook, somebody ran wide. They were clearly off the track. It happened in Moto 3 or Moto 2, I think it was this year.
Yeah,
turn 3 at Barcelona, somebody was off. They're fair enough, aren't they? That's fair enough. But, dear. Who's to blame, though? Is it Kawasaki for sinking that low, as so many people are saying they are? Is it the stewards / race direction for not saying, come on, guys, that's silly? The thing is, though, I think now race direction, they've backed themselves into a corner, because if they're going to take positions off other people for cutting the green, then they can't really, they've got no answer to that, have they?
You've hit the nail really on the head there with that, because if that's the margin, if that's the level, then you're going to have right, in the garage of Yamaha, Ducati and Kawasaki now with a spotter.
Yeah.
With a spotter.
Watching every single piece of onboard footage.
Every single bit of footage. And that, you know, once you set the bar at that level to outfit for looking for those kind of crimes against each other, that's not sporting.
Bad sportsmanship, isn't it? Yeah. What are they going to happen then? Is somebody going to have to go to Dorna from each team at the end of the race requesting every single frame of onboard footage? So, is that a bit
if
there?
You're going to punish that? Yes.
Ah, dear, oh dear. Well, as you can tell, the emotion's still flowing and the adrenaline in this commentary box. We've only just come off air. I don't know what Charlie Hiscott thinks about it paddock. I think I can guess. I'll know. Kawasaki can get political. There's no doubt about it. The team there, there's been a few little incidents over the last few years, James. There's no point going through them all now, obviously. What we do know is James Whittam's commented on this on the telly. This is what James Whittam said just a few minutes ago back at Snetterton, chatting with Rachel Stringer.
Well, a great weekend then from Adrian Hurtras. And someone that we thought also had a perfect weekend was Toprak. But we had some news, and you may have seen it going across the ticker on the screen, or you may have heard it as well, that he actually got penalised, didn't he, in the Super Pole race for exceeding track limits on the last lap, which obviously put him down to P2, which would have actually affected race two in terms of the grid, and obviously has taken away one of those wins.
Yep.
We're seeing it now, Whit. Really late decision, possibly too late to be called, maybe?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, it's disgusting. I totally agree with James Toseland. The problem is that the organisers have, they've worked themselves, they've actually backed themselves into a corner with this. They've got acres of hard runoff on every corner, right, that you can run onto. It's not grass, that's painted tarmac. So they've got that. So then if people start taking liberties and using it for advantage, they have to have a penalty. And then, exactly. And I agree with that. Once you have to have people sat in an office who may or may not have even ever ridden a motorbike, never mind race one, say, oh, yeah, he did go off the track. Right, a penalty. And the difference then is that the teams will think, well, we can take an advantage of this. We can complain because the precedents have been set. If we find it, we can dissect everything, look at every single corner. We find one wheel, one little inch of our competitors' tyres on the painted tarmac and off the track, we can get them demoted. And that's, to me, that's taken away from racing. It's spoiling the sport that I love. It's disgusting.
And why did it come so late as well, Whit? That's
another question. Because you've got half an hour to put a protest in about anything, about a technical regulation, about how you think somebody's cheating with the regulation of the bike or whatever. So it's taken the team a while to look at it and actually try and find its margins. Here we go. Then they've put a complaint in. Then the organisers, once they had the thing where Toprak and Locatelli were demoted a place each at Assen on the last lap, last corner, which to me was disgusting as well, precedent's been set. So then Kawasaki go up to the organisers, put a complaint in, and the organisers then have to do something because they've done something before. For me, simple solution, right? You have tarmac, you have a white line, you have grass. You go on the grass, you lose time naturally because you don't have any grip. Simple.
And they shouldn't announce it, should they, at the end of the day? We've already wrapped up race two as well, and Super Pole, and everyone celebrated three in a row. A great weekend for Yamaha as well, which is obviously pretty disappointing for the team because they were victorious. They'd had a record breaking weekend, hadn't they, for Toprak? But we'll have to talk about that in 2 weeks' time. That's when we go racing again.
By the way, happy birthday to James for Monday, and it will be Monday by the time you're all listening to this. Happy birthday, Whit. Disgusting, James Tosen, was the word Whit used there.
Well, for the age he's got to. It was disgusting, yeah. Happy birthday, James. I hope you have had a wonderful time and a wonderful evening. We've got a team here at Eurosport, haven't we? And, you know, you've got people like James Hayden, you know, very successful British superbike rider.
Hayden will hate that, by the way. I'm sorry I just interrupted you there. That was very rude of me, James. But Hayden will hate it. He can't stand the whole track limits thing anyway. He's had some big rants on the telly about it in the past.
Nobody can. It's just not sportsman. It's just not sporting at all.
That's a stupidity. And we've got nothing against Jonathan Rea and Kawasaki at all, have we? But as a team and a rider. They are phenomenal with everything they've achieved, but we have to analyse every incident individually, and that's just...
They'll lose a lot of respect for that.
They've sunk very low there, haven't they?
They'll lose a lot of respect from the paddock and from the fan base with that one. And, you know, James Aiden, James Whittam, yourself, you don't have to be an ex-racer to understand that's just not sporting. You know, even the people at home will be disgusted at that. And, it's a clear-cut case, isn't it, unfortunately? I think I saw Paul Denning's tweet about it congratulating Yamaha on their victory, and it was
Kawasaki. You mean
for Kawasaki, and it seemed very much tongue in cheek. You know,
yeah, but this is what Paul Denning said at 38 minutes past the hour. So World SBK tweeted, "FIM World SBK stewards, rider number 54, Toprak Razgatioglu, and just to rub salt into the wounds, they tagged Toprak as well. So if that's the way Toprak found out by seeing a tweet, that's, well, he probably knew by then anyway. Anyway, Toprak has been demoted by one position in the World SBK Tiso Superpole race results after exceeding track limits. And then it goes on to say on the final lap, which I can't see on this particular screenshot, Paul Denning, quote, retweeted that with the following: "This penalty follows a formal protest by the Kawasaki Racing team. We assume, after forensic study of the onboard footage, any infringement was extremely marginal and was not originally noted by race direction. Congratulations on your, inverted commas, quote marks, victory, close quote marks, guys, well deserved, dot, dot, dot." Yeah, that just about sums up Paul Denning's mood, obviously.
Yeah, I think there's a hint of sarcasm towards the end of or maybe throughout the whole message.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, Paul Denning is an ultimate professional, and you know, it would have taken a lot for Paul Denning to pick his phone up and do something publicly like that.
He'll want to make it clear, won't he, that wasn't just a race direction decision. That's only been looked at because Kawasaki protested.
Yeah, race direction should have kicked that out the door.
Mm.
Simple as. So they're just as much as fault to me as Kawasaki are. Race direction should have said, get out the door. We're not having that. If we, you know, it's like the rules of the land and the law. You know, if someone comes with a bit of a problem and a judge says, yes, you're right, it just could open the floodgates, can't it, to everybody else jumping in. Like you say, we don't want that. We don't want that level in racing.
One thing we need in sport and in bike racing in particular, which is so dangerous, is respect. And there's a bit of a lack of respect being shown there, isn't there, I think, James? I'm just going through my folder here just to confirm to you who the members of Race Direction actually are. Tamara Matko, the chair of Race Direction. She's also the FIM safety officer, and great work there from Tamara across the weekend. There's been some very nasty accidents. We've seen her out on track a lot. Gianfranco Carloia is the second member of Race Direction. He's also the race director and has been for many a year. And his son, Stefano Carloia, who's the Dorna representative in Race Direction. You also have a stewards panel, Tamara Matko again. She's the Race Direction representative within that stewards panel. One of four rolling members of the FIM World SBK stewards. They changed during the season. And one further person, three in total. And it's one other member appointed by rotation by the FIM Commission of Circuit Racing. So I don't even know whether that one would have come down to the stewards panel or Race Direction itself, probably Race Direction. I bet you the stewards didn't agree. As we said before, the general feeling from Assen with the Yamaha moment coming out of that chicane is that the stewards didn't actually agree with that. But when they've said, if you cut the green painted area, and we're looking in particular into last laps, like I said before, James, they've sort of backed themselves into a corner there. Race Direction have got no leg to stand on, because Kawasaki in this case would have said, well, he's touched the green, guys, and you've written here in this rule that you can't do that.
Whoever's ruled that as a misdemeanor is, clearly in the wrong. Clearly in the wrong. So
Race Direction do have the final say, don't they?
Yeah.
Regardless of what's in the regulations.
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Yeah. On all of the rules, there is a few where, you know, if it's completely clear cut, you know, the penalty is the penalty.
Mm.
So, but there is, obviously, in racing, you know, there's loads of grey areas, isn't there, of where the Race Direction has to just have a look at it and make a final call on it. And this is one of those situations, because a protest always creates that. You know, it's down to someone's judgment. And you will have watched that footage of the replay of Top Right just clipping that white line on the way up the hill and said, yes, I agree with you. He's going to dock him a place. But luckily, it's just one place, you know, and it's only the sprint race as well. So it's not a full 5 points. Is it 3 points, the difference between first and second?
Yes, it is. It's 12 and 9, isn't it? So it's Toprak's lost...
10 points, not 13 points in the lead of this championship.
Yeah, so exactly.
You know, it's not a massive thing, right? But I'll tell you what, I won both my world championships by 2 points, right? That's 3 points he's just been docked. I wouldn't have been world champion if that had been the case. And I'll tell you what, I would have been well annoyed at that.
Imagine the sour taste it's going to leave in the racing community and with fans if this championship is decided
by less than 3 points
in Jonathan Rea's favour, by less than 3 points.
Absolutely, yeah.
It would be a bit of a shame, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Well, there you go. I'm sure by the time you all hear this, we will have had more reactions. I've just been looking at my phone, actually, James, to see whether any press releases have come through yet from the teams.
If you're undecided, who you're going to support now, there'll be a lot more Blue fans now.
I tell you what, I've got more messages coming through from friends and colleagues. Yes, and I agree with you, by the way. Track limits is a joke has just come through from a trusted colleague. I'm not going to name everyone because it wouldn't be fair, because I haven't got time to ask if they want to be named in the podcast. So let's just put it this way. I've had several reactions from trusted colleagues, respected colleagues in racing, and they're all agreeing with what we've said so far. No one said, oh, Kawasaki, you've got a point there. There you go. Let us know what your thoughts are as well. James N. Toesland. I don't want to barrage you, James, with a load of tweets, but I bet there's a few reactions already. Forgetting that for a minute, and let's just say Toprak's done the treble, because on the road he did, even though officially, sadly, in the rule books and the record books, he hasn't now. But what a superb weekend for Yamaha and Toprak Razgatlioglu. They really were, I'm not going to say in a league of their own, but the dominant force this weekend.
Fabulous. The bike control and skill. In that second race, watch on the very first lap into the hairpin, Toprak. His rear wheel must have come off the floor at least two foot off the floor. And he still just put it down, hit the apex, and then I think he still exited the corner first. You know, and it's really, really impressive. And I'm talking, you know, I used to do it at a decent level, right? And I'm watching this kid doing things that I never used to do, and I'm not sure if I could have done. And, you know, just to say that is, I enjoy watching him. He's exciting to watch with his bike, the level of skill that he has, with that braking technique that he has. But he's found a team that understands him very well. Phil is a chief engineer, and Paul Denning, they run such a great outfit. You know, it's been a long time since they've won the championship of Yamaha, and this looks like it's going to be one of the best chances they've had since 2007, I think it was. No, sorry, no, 2000, wasn't it? But 2007
was the Manufacturers' Championship.
Manufacturers' Championship.
And 2009, of course, with Ben Spies for the riders.
Of course, yeah. So it's, 12 years since Yamaha's took the victory.
Yeah.
And, 14 years since it won the Manufacturers, 16 years, sorry, since it won the Manufacturers. So it's been a long time since Yamaha have always been there or thereabouts, but they've not taken the final trophies home, and this looks like the best chance this year with him.
It looks very difficult now, doesn't it, for Kawasaki in terms of, I mean, there wasn't much Jonathan Rea could do. They were closing in through the fast sweeping corners, wasn't he? Estoril in particular, turn three, that right-hander, some really good exits from there for Jonathan Rea. And that move he pulled, let's think back to that sprint race, and the respect the riders showed one another was phenomenal, wasn't it? In fairness to the two riders, it was absolutely superb. That last lap fight in the sprint race, James, it was gloves off, bit of contact here and there, but just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant bike racing.
Yeah, and the reaction from Johnny and Toprak on the slowing down lap just showed you just what respect they've got for each other and just how much they are enjoying riding and racing against each other at that level with that intensity to it. So I'll be really surprised if it's been Johnny that's kind of gave Kawasaki the heads up about that. I'll be really surprised. I can't see that. But, you know, if it is, then so be it. But, because you can't go on the slowing down lap and pat somebody on the back and congratulate them really genuinely for that Johnny did to Toprak, then get back into Parc Fermé and whisper to Pere Riba, just have a look at turn six with me. I'm sure he went on the blue line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't imagine him doing it.
And we've got to repeat ourselves here. We don't know for sure if that's what's happened, but all we do know is that Jonathan Rea whispered something in Pere Riba's ear. It looked particularly secretive. Pere sort of nodded. We'll never know for sure. Of course we won't. But either way, somebody within that Kawasaki team, at least one person, has obviously complained. But you have to think that they will have spoken with the rider, even if it wasn't Jonathan informing Pere there, James. Surely the team manager would have spoken with Jonathan first, wouldn't he, before they put the protest on? Or is it possible Jonathan Rea wouldn't have even known that protest had gone in? Because we've got to be fair to Jonathan.
You've got to do it within 30 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So a rider will be doing his post-interviews.
Yes.
He'll be trying to get out of his leathers.
Yeah, podium.
He's knackered, you know, trying to maybe jump in the shower. So I'll be very surprised if Johnny knew more, other than maybe, if Johnny's put the word in and then gone, right, which we're probably assuming, right? But if Johnny has got nothing to do with this, and it's just been the Kawasaki team of somebody's just seen possibility of that.
Which is possible.
I don't think they would have even notified Johnny about it because they would have known, any engineer would have known that it was a bit of a dirty tactic. So you don't ask people, do you, when it's a dirty tactic? You're not going to go, hey, Johnny, we're going to put this protest in, mate. I know it's a bit naughty and that, but what do you think? They're not going to do it. Because Johnny Ray, I'm sure, I would hope, go, give it a rest, lads. Give it a rest. I'd hope that would be the case. So I am just going to go with my gut instinct and say Johnny knew nothing about it. And because you've got to get the protest in within 30 minutes, he would have been getting out of his leathers, doing his post-race interviews and calming down, ready for the second race.
I'm really interested, actually, to see what Jonathan Ray makes of it, because he might be a bit embarrassed about this whole thing, won't he? If that wasn't what he was talking to Pereira about, which is absolutely possible, we're just discussing all possibilities.
Are you sure they've got the right clip?
What, of the moment?
Of the misdemeanour?
Well, I think they must have, because...
You know what I mean?
Well, I worked with Dorna James for 4 years and in the TV truck and doing the commentary and so on and so forth. And I know that there is a representative of Race Direction. His name is Carlos Bratel, a very nice man. He used to work in MotoGP, who's in contact with the TV truck to help the production of the race. So if there has been a track limits moment, he will inform the people in the truck of who
it was, clip it was,
which lap it was on, which corner it was. So considering how much earlier in the day that was, they've had loads of time to go through all the footage.
Yep.
If
that's the best one they could have found.
Yeah.
Crikey me, clutching at straws.
I'm trying to think now. I think
it
that
doesn't really do it justice, does it?
I think that replay, because like we said, the only person who would have known that would have been Jonathan Ray directly behind. But I do think, let's be fair to Jonathan here as well, because we have to be fair to everyone in this. I think that replay was shown, wasn't it, in the cool down from that race. So it's possible someone in the garage may have seen that. You know what I mean? That they'd already seen that angle.
We've said that. Yeah.
But anyway, we're just shocked, as you can tell. It's a shame. Ducati. Ducati, then Scott Redding. Again, it's too little too late, isn't it? They've come good in the last race. He wasn't on the pace to match the top two, but he's on the podium. It shows it could have been three podiums, but qualified eighth, stuck in that group in race one, James, got frustrated, crashed, finished 12th, fought up to fifth in the sprint race, which was crucial for a good grid position for the last race. But again, it's too little too late, and they've lost a lot of points. Is it 75, I think it is now, for Scott Redding behind the top two, behind the leader?
I'll put the notes for you, but it was
75.
Yeah, it is something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's shocking weekend for Ducati. Unfortunately, the package just did not look like it wanted to go around those tight corners, hold a line, and do what the riders wanted the bike to do. And, you know, the to make it even worse, it was the qualifying position, like you say. To start eighth, third row at World Superbike level is a disaster. You need to be at least on those first two rows to get away with the Johnny Rays of this world and the top racks, because you know how fast they are on those first few laps. They don't make mistakes. And you watch those races back. By the end of lap two, you were 3 seconds behind.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
So, and like you even called it, there was like an A and a B group this weekend, you know, and the A group was Johnny and Toprak, and closely followed, not too far away, was Alex Lowes, but crashed twice out of three, which was a disaster for him as well, because he could have had three podiums definitely this weekend, so that was real loss for him. But the rest of them, you know, Rinaldi kind of had a decent run in the first race, didn't he? But and Vandermark, I must say that he was very impressive. Leon Haslam had a decent weekend, other than the crash in the last one. I thought he was strong, but you know, the Hondas looked a little bit better, didn't they? But it's still a gap, isn't it, to those top three, especially top two.
Vandermark was really good, actually, wasn't he? It's the first time he's not finished on the podium at Magny-Cours since 2015, so he'll be annoyed about that. Didn't get a podium at Assen this year either. A similarly good podium record for him there. New engine went in for the sprint race, didn't it? Lost the whole of free practice three on Saturday morning. So actually, from a sort of psychological point of view, James, the way Vandermark managed to bounce back and just focus on the job in hand was really impressive. And how about that for a scary moment on the start-finish straight too?
Ridiculous.
With Locatelli.
I mean, we didn't know this, but he had a bit of a coming together with Locatelli a few laps before, which just moved his brake lever protector out of the way a little bit. And that then gave access to that incident with Vandermark and hitting the back of Locatelli, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was just a freak thing where he came together and Locatelli's elbow nudged the brake protector out the way and then hit the back of him. I mean, it's very, very unfortunate, but what was fortunate is that rear, that front tyre just connecting again and getting up to speed on the rotation to grip again to be able to steer, because while it was locked, it was going straight for that pit wall, and he really got away with that one.
Have you ever had anything like that? You know, your front brake being hit?
Luckily not. Luckily, wow, not. Yeah. I got hit going into turn one at Monza in 2010 on the Yamaha. But it, I suppose it did. Yes, that's exactly what happened to me, and I lost the front. But not like that was on the brakes. James Whittam actually said something really, really interesting on the fact of why it happened the way it did, because it's not very often that the front brake gets an impact on acceleration, and on acceleration there's less weight on the front, and that's why the front locks so easily and quickly and viciously.
It's pushing from the rear.
Because it's pushing from the rear and the weight's off the front, and that's why it's steered so quickly off to the left. Usually when you contact the brake lever on somebody else, you're on the brakes going into the corner, and that's why you see the riders going over the front of the bike. So really freak accident, and nice to see that they all got away with it.
Yeah, Michael Rinaldi had a decent race one, didn't he? How do we explain that, though, the fact Rinaldi's up there? I mean, Giovanni Crippi and Scott Redding said, as we suspected during race one, that with the different temperatures, that always affects them, and it's not quite so easy for Redding to use the X tyre in cooler temperatures. Navarra, for example, was very, very hot, wasn't it? It worked for them there. Is that just because Rinaldi's is lighter and more nimble, as we've talked about before, and it's not putting so much strain on the rear tyre? That's what Scott Redding would tell you.
I'm not sure. And this is the problem when, you know, I don't have a clear answer, is when a rider's inconsistent.
Yeah.
Because when a rider's inconsistent, you can't put your finger on it. And this is why consistency in racing with any of the riders is so, so important for everybody. For the engineers to know exactly what to do to the bike to improve it in the garage. Because if one race you're fourth, the next race you're 12th, and then the next race you're third, and then the next race you're 8th, and, you know, when you come into the box, it's very difficult for the team to kind of put the finger on and get a system together and a relationship to making those right decisions at the right time. Because you have to work in such a small working window to make those right calls at the right time. And when the wind is so wide of Ducati, all the engineers, they've just got no idea, because the variations are just too vast.
Does this come back again to what Redding said pre-season? The fact you've got one really small light rider and one taller and heavier rider, or should that not matter in your opinion?
It shouldn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter, because you've got the same inconsistencies with both riders.
It's just strange how Redding then, you know, struggled on Saturday, when weirdly Rinaldi's then up there and wasn't far off the podium. It's so weird, isn't it?
I think the wind is different for each rider anyway.
Mm, yeah.
But obviously with the differences in weight and size, you're not getting the similarities of both sides of the garage, where the two engineers and the two teams can work together to try and maybe narrow those options down and work in a smaller window. It keeps it separate. You know, that's what Scott's hinting at. And it definitely can hinder yourself when you've got issues. When you haven't got issues, and each rider is different, but it works, fair enough. But when they've got the inconsistencies like they have, it's very, very difficult to put your finger on what the problem is. And, you know, you'd rather a rider like Locatelli finish fourth all the time, because at least you know where you're at and what you need to improve. But one race you're fourth, next race you're fifth, and then you're tenth, and it's impossible for a team to work with that.
Before we sign off, James, because I've kept you for half an hour or so already, Supersport 600, first of all, Joel Clouzel, I can't believe it. Joel Clouzel injured again, the official line. They've been taken to Nevers Hospital, Joel Clouzel, and of course, Luca Bernardi, who had that crash earlier on in the Supersport race. It was a head injury, wasn't it, for Joel Clouzel, and a back
head
injury.
And
head and neck for Joel Clouzel, back injury for Luca Bernardi. Best wishes with them. In terms of the race itself, it seems a bit... seems almost wrong in some ways, doesn't it, to talk about a motorcycle race when you've had two nasty injuries like that. But championship-wise, it's looking good for Dominic Agata.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. He confirmed in his post-race interview that he is going to be missing the next race in Catalonia.
Yeah.
So, but to be honest, with Odendaal's performance this weekend, you know, I don't think Agata's going to be too worried. Because it doesn't look a guaranteed 50-point loss, does it, that Stephen's going to gain on him in Catalonia. With the Even Brothers bike, which is so fast, the Catalan track is one of the fastest tracks on the calendar in the world. So you'd have to say that if he wasn't on the podium twice, Odendaal, he's doing something wrong himself, definitely. So, but, you know, over 60 points in the lead of this championship now. He can go to Moto E and do that, come back and still be in the lead of this championship, I believe.
And Supersport 300, a really strange problem for Adrian Huertas, who'd already won race one, dramatic race, as they always are, on Saturday. almost got away from him on Sunday, but to ride around that problem, some sort of issue with his handlebar, wasn't it? And still win the race was super impressive stuff.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Sometimes you just get a little bit of lubrication on the clamps, of the handlebar clamps that clamp onto the front fork. You've got to be really careful with that, because even if you put the right torsion, even if you tighten them really, really heavily, the force that the rider puts through his arms through those handlebars can just start to move them, and they pivot around the handlebar top yoke and in that area, and then the handlebars can be in completely different positions. And if you can imagine, like, one handlebar being really forward and the other one being in its natural position, oh, it's so awkward to change direction. And what's risky is he didn't know for a couple of laps, when you go from right to left, what you do, you push on the opposite handlebar. So he'll be pushing outwards on that left handlebar, and he would have been worried that he was going to push it out even further.
Yeah.
And once the handlebar goes over a certain point, past the horizontal point, to ride with the handlebar facing forwards is really, really quite dangerous. So he might have even got black flagged. So I think he must have nursed that. He was a second lap slower than he has been all weekend. He nursed it and still won the race, even with those issues. Tom Booth Amos was really, really frustrated. He had a few words with the wear test, but you could just see that he's frustrated because he should have taken advantage of that.
Well, I'm just going to get all of the best wishes out there. We've already said happy birthday for Monday to James Whittam. Let's say happy wedding anniversary to Will Brooks, our executive producer, and his wife Sarah for Wednesday, and Aga, our production manager. Happy birthday, Aga, for Thursday. The week of the 6th of September seems to be a pretty busy one for anniversaries and birthdays at Eurosport, doesn't it?
I'm impressed that you've got the calendar in there with everybody's kind of... do you know where my birthday is?
Barry Nutley's birthday is next week, by the way, Thursday the 16th.
That's a no then.
Yeah, yours is October.
How offensive.
Yours is October. Yours is October, the same month as mine.
That's it. You're off
the
16th? You're off the Christmas card.
The 16th of October.
You're off the Christmas card. Good. That's done.
No, what is it? It's 16th.
The 5th.
Ah, the 5th.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew it was coming up soon.
Close enough. At least you know what month it was. I'll let you off.
And I know you're going to be 23.
Thank you. I saved it. Fully saved it.
James, thanks again for everything over the weekend. You'll be with us, of course, for the Barcelona weekend, although it's not a clash with BSB, of course. We've got Silverstone BSB coming up this weekend, and then we'll have Barcelona, Jerez and Portimao World Superbikes. Although for Barcelona, Witt will be with myself in the commentary box. You're going to be in the studio, aren't you, with Matt back in London?
I've been demoted. Have you done a Kawasaki and put a complaint in? Yeah,
don't
I'm going to be with Matt in the. Yeah. I'm going to be with Matt in the studio. So I thought I had a face of radio these days, but obviously not. Nice.
And oh, by the way, thank you very much for comparing me in the Eurosport WhatsApp group to Coronation Street's very own Roy Cropper earlier in the weekend.
Right, please put a picture of your bag on this now, because you're going to have to explain that. So, and I will get sympathy from everybody that views it.
Listeners, I'd just like to know what you think about the fact that two-time World Superbike champion James Tozend even knows who Roy Cropper is.
Hey, mate, I'm on the wrong side of 40.
He's a national treasure, James.
Absolutely. Don't diss Roy.
Right up there with Barlow and Baldwin and all the rest of them. Anyway, on that bombshell, thanks for listening over the weekend. Thanks for watching on Eurosport and Discovery Plus and the Eurosport app. And James, I will speak with you next week.
Cheers, Greg. Cheers, everyone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.